One of the most talented Christian writers that I've come across in the last 15 years or so is a guy by the name of Donald Miller. And in one of his books entitled Searching for God Knows What, he tells about a time that he and his friends were sitting in a coffee shop one Saturday morning, and someone in the group asked everybody else if they had seen the World Series of Poker on television the night before. Well, nobody in the group had seen the show, but it led to a discussion of gambling. Well, the owner of the coffee shop, who was a very successful businessman, joined into the discussion, and he said that he didn't know anybody who gambled a lot, who was successful in managing money, building a business, or doing well at life. He told this group of young guys that everybody he knew who managed life well worked really hard. They faced the facts of reality, and they engaged life as it really is. Miller said that he then looked at the businessman and said, "But the facts of reality stink." The businessman looked Miller back in the eye, and he said, "Reality is like a fine wine. It does not appeal to children." Well, friends, if we know Jesus as our Savior, I want us to know that His Holy Spirit is calling all of us here this morning to move away from childhood towards spiritual and emotional and intellectual maturity. Unfortunately, we have a preacher who can help us with that process. His name was Solomon. But in the book we're going to study over the next few weeks, he introduces himself as the preacher, the son of David, king in Jerusalem. In Hebrew, the word for preacher is koaleth. It means a person who stands before an assembly to address a message to them. The corresponding word in Greek is ecclesiastic, and it's where the book of Ecclesiastes gets its name. Ecclesiastes joins Job and the Psalms and Proverbs and the Song of Psalms as part of what is labeled the wisdom literature of the Old Testament. But Ecclesiastes is really, really unique because it's bothered scholars, it's disturbed teachers for centuries because of the way it portrays life on earth. And one of the reasons it's so disturbing is because it undermines a lot of the notions that we all have about life. You see, if there was ever a writer or a speaker who forces us to face the nature of reality, it's the preacher of Ecclesiastes. As we're going to see time and time again in the coming weeks, he tells us that reality is more than just a fine wine. And sometimes reality is like a slap across the face. Sometimes it's like a kick in the rear. And to see what I mean, look at how he begins this most unusual of books in verses 1 and 2. It starts off, "The words of the teacher, son of David, king in Jerusalem." Meaningless, meaningless, says the teacher. Utterly meaningless. Everything is meaningless. Well, the word that the New International Version translates meaningless here, and in some other translations, such as the King James Version, they translate it vanity. It's the Hebrew word hebel. Hebel is used 38 times in Ecclesiastes, and it's the key to understanding the whole book. There are some occasions where Solomon uses the word to mean vain or meaningless, but in the vast majority of cases, he uses it to mean fleeting or transient like a vapor. In fact, Eugene Peterson, in his translation of the Bible called The Message, translates Hebel as smoke. It can just dissipate immediately. And Solomon most often uses it in the same way. I want to suggest that life is not meaningless, and it's usually not vain, but life is always fleeting. A number of years ago, when I finally finished my dissertation, it was a long road, my sister Becky and her son Mike, my nephew, and my aunt Bernie decided to take a vacation to kind of celebrate. And so we were going to go down to Disney World in Orlando, and we got on the plane on Sunday morning, and we jetted down to Orlando, and it's kind of an all-day trip. And that Sunday night, we got into our hotel room there at Disney World. And we were kind of getting settled in, and Becky and I sat down and looked at some of the brochures, and we decided that we would plan out what we were going to do Monday and Tuesday and Wednesday and which parks we were going to go to and which rides we really wanted to hit. And my nephew Mike, who was 9 years old at the time, all of a sudden in the middle of Becky's discussion with me goes, guys, don't talk so much about this. If you talk about it too much, it'll go so fast. And 3 nights later on Wednesday night, as we were packing up to get ready to fly home on Thursday morning, Mike said in a quiet voice with a tear in his eye, "It went so fast." See, that was a great trip. It wasn't meaningless. It wasn't vain. But it was really, really fleeting. And you've all experienced the same thing. Maybe it was your wedding day, or maybe it was the birth of a child. Maybe it was a great promotion you got at your job, or maybe it was a raise that you got. Maybe it was the completion of a degree. Maybe it was the fulfillment of a lifelong ambition. Maybe it was a trip that you and your family took to a place that you always wanted to go. Those were wonderful experiences. They blessed your life. You wouldn't trade them for anything, but you couldn't hold on to them. And as time went by, even the memory of those things began to fade. Well, that's not only true of our relationships and our jobs and our accomplishments. It's really, really true of all the stuff that over time we buy and accumulate throughout the course of our lives. John Ortberg tells about a speaker that came to his church one time, and he put little red stickers on all the stuff that they had brought to the stage. And it represented things like cars and houses and jobs and retirement plans and tools and achievements. And on each sticker was printed the word temporary. And at the end of the talk, the speaker went around the stage and he said, "Temporary, temporary, temporary." He was pulling the tags off of all the stuff on stage. And he said, "If you're living for any of these things or for all of these things, you're only going to find temporary satisfaction or temporary meaning, because they'll all come to an end and you'll be left feeling empty, because all of these things are fleeting." Now, Solomon knew that. He was one of the greatest and most affluent rulers of the ancient world. He built armies. He built gold-plated buildings. He built this incredible temple to worship Almighty God. But somewhere along the way, he recognized the reality that all those things were fleeting. They were transient. They were temporary. They were like a vapor of smoke that just blows away in the wind. Solomon also came to another realization. He discovered that life is not only fleeting, life is also really frustrating. Look at the question he asks in verse 3. "What do people gain from all their labors at which they toil under the sun?" Now, this is a really, really interesting question, because the phrase "under the sun" is used 29 times in the book of Ecclesiastes to describe the life that we're able to see and experience in our own limited existence as frail, mortal human creatures in the material realm. And in this verse, Solomon combines it with the word labors. And the word labors here means to gain an edge, to make a profit. Solomon's asking here if all the time and the effort and the work we put into various aspects of life are really worth it. In the end, is there any kind of payoff? At the end, do we really feel like we're better off? At the end of the day, have we really accomplished what we wanted? I think most of the time, much of the time, many of us would say, well, of course I'm better off. But Solomon would question us and push back on us. And he does so by pointing our perspective out towards nature. Look what he says here in verses 4 through 8. Generations come and generations go, but the earth remains forever. The sun rises and the sun sets and hurries back to where it rises. The wind blows to the south and turns to the north. Round and round goes it goes, ever returning on its course. All streams flow into the sea, yet the sea is never full. To the place the streams come from, they return again. All things are continuously at work, more than one can say. Solomon says that as the years go by, people come and go by the millions. And they put in all this time and energy to work and effort, and yet they're mortal and they die. But he says, as you really take an honest look at reality, what endures is not the work or the effort or the achievements of humanity, but nature. Nature stays the same century after century after century. The sun rises and sets. It rose this morning from our perspective in the east, and tonight it will set in the west, and tomorrow it will do the same thing. The winds blow. It blows from the south, and then it blows from the north. Streams flow into the oceans, and then we create clouds, and then there's rain, and it creates more rivers, and it flows into the rivers, and then it eventually flows back into the ocean. All over again, and everything just stays the same. Now, if by some chance you think, well, Solomon was wrong, or you're sitting here and you're thinking, I hope he was wrong, let me ask you if you've ever, by some chance, in your moments of honesty, felt the same thing about your own life. I mean, have you ever been annoyed or maybe even depressed by the fact that no matter how hard you work, no matter how much effort you put into something, life just seems so doggone trivial, so cyclical, so incredibly frustrating. I mean, you wash the dishes, you leave the room, you feel really good, but you walk in the next morning and the dish demon came and filled your sink full of dirty dishes. Or you get a haircut and it looks fantastic, it looks awesome. For a day or two. But then the wind blows or it grows back. And a few weeks later, you got to go get it cut for $40 all over again. Or you go to work and you make the sale and you feel really, really good about the sale. And that feeling lasts for a day or two. But then you realize, you know what? Next week, I've got to go out and I've got to do it all over again and again and again. Friends, Solomon is arguing that life is something of a cul-de-sac. You drive in and round you go, and no matter how hard you try, no matter how much effort you put into it, there's always a sense that contentment and satisfaction and fulfillment are out of our reach. And I don't know about you, but that is really, really frustrating. See, he jolts us into facing reality by telling us that we're going to live a certain period of time and then we're going to die and we'll be gone. But nature all around us will continue on. 100 years from now, every one of us in this room will be gone. But Castle Rock, the rock down here, should the Lord tarry, Castle Rock will still be there. See, you and I are made from the dust of the earth. And it kind of mocks us. Because at some point, we'll go back to the earth, but the earth continues on. Now, what's really, really interesting is this. Every new generation that comes along seems to think that this reality doesn't apply to them. Every generation thinks that they'll overcome normal human limitations, that they'll make tremendous progress, that they'll do better than all the previous generations before them. I mean, I've heard this. We'll do better than the greatest generation. We'll do better than the builder generation. I hear this a lot from my students. We'll do better than all you boomers in your generation. We'll do better than the busters. And now Generation Z is coming along saying, we'll do better than all those millennials. But Solomon stomps on that. From his perspective, the more things change, the more they seem to stay the same. Look what he says in verses 9 and 10. What has been will be again. And what has been done will be done again. There's nothing new under the sun. Is there anything of which one can say, look, this is something new? Nah, it was here already a long time ago. It was here before our time. I hate to depress you, but Solomon's basically arguing that life's a lot like a treadmill, and we're on it just like every generation before us was on it. He's saying, listen, this idea of progress, that's an illusion. Life is a lot more like a hamster wheel than a forward line of advance. And some people would object, especially in our generation. They'd say, hey, wait a minute. That's not true. Look at all the progress we've made technologically in the last few years. I mean, we got Apple iPhones, and they're awesome, aren't they? And we have Apple iPads, and you can watch movies and all kind of stuff on this, and that's incredible. And we have Apple MacBook Airs, and you can process data unlike anything you've ever seen. Solomon would look at that, and he'd say, well, you know, those are kind of fun devices. But actually, they're just devices of communication and information. And we've been doing that for millennia. Yeah, the forms are kind of cool. But trust me, friends, American friends in 2018, and you know this, these will all be obsolete within a few years. Even Apple World will become obsolete. And you know what? He's right. He's right. I know that some of you here under the age of 30, but back in the day, we used to listen to music on these things, and they're not Frisbees. They're called albums. Now, I'm going to confess to you how out of touch I am. I have a lot of these. I still play them. I'm kind of retro, yeah, okay? Well, now we listen to music in a different form, but those were totally cool 50 years ago. Yeah, they're obsolete. Or you know what we used to do when we wanted to watch movies back in the day? We would go to these stores called Blockbuster and Hollywood Video, and we would rent these things called video cassettes. Yeah, they actually existed. There were stores you would go in and you could shop around and go, ooh, I want to see Star Trek, or I want to see this. But eventually these got replaced by CDs, and now they're gone, and we stream things. Form's different, but the content's still the same. And then, this is what we call, for those of you who are young, a cassette tape. Yeah, we used to put these in our houses, and we'd have them in our cars, and then these went by the wayside because now you download everything from the cloud. You go on to iTunes. And Solomon would go, yeah, iTunes is cool, but it's just a different form. Nothing is really new. In my day and age, we had music that was great and cool, and it was live. Technology isn't that big of a deal. Some of you are sitting here thinking, Scott, the problem with you and Solomon is you're just old and you're short-sighted. You're stuck. You're irrelevant. That's not true for me. I'm special. I'm unique. I'm going to make a big splash. Solomon would go, sorry, you're not special. You're not unique. Any splash you make, it's not going to last. Look what he says in verse 11. No one remembers the former generations, and even those yet to come will not be remembered by those who follow them. This is a fascinating observation. He's telling us we don't remember people from generations before us, and even those who will live two or three generations from now and will do all these supposedly great things, they won't be remembered by the generations that come after them. I had an incredible experience of the truth of this last November. Some of you here know the name Haddon Robinson. Haddon taught preaching at Dallas Seminary for a number of years, and then he became the president of Denver Seminary, where I was a student, and then I was an adjunct, and Haddon became one of my mentors. And then eventually he went back to Gordon-Conwell Theological Seminary, where he finished out his career. Haddon was this unbelievable preacher. In fact, he was listed as one of the top 10 preachers on a number of lists in the late 1990s and early 2000s. Haddon was a great writer. Haddon made a huge impact. There are schools and churches all around the country today that have the imprint of Haddon Robinson's ministry on them. Great man, great preacher, great servant of God. Well, I'm going into class this one day last November, and I'm setting up my computer, and one of my students came in early. His name's Andrew. Wonderful, wonderful young guy. I love Andrew. And he says, hey, Dr. Wenig, I'm going to be in your preaching class next semester. I said, that's great, Andrew. Love having you in class. He says, now, is the main book we're going to use Communicating for Change by Andy Stanley? I said, well, love Andy's book, but that's the supplementary text. I said, the main text for the class is Biblical Preaching by Haddon Robinson. And he said, who's that? Who's that? See, if you're around today and you like basketball, especially the NBA, you love LeBron or you love Kevin Durant or you're really into Steph Curry. And most kids today who really, really like basketball, they know all those names and they've probably heard of Michael Jordan. But they have no clue who Bill Russell or Elgin Baylor or Pistol Pete Maravich were. And trust me on this right now. There's some kid out there right now somewhere in North America, maybe somewhere around the world, and they're 5 years old, and they're incredibly gifted, and they're already working on their basketball skills. And 20 years from now, he or she will become known as the greatest basketball player on the planet. And the people who admire him or her, they'll have no memory of LeBron, no memory of KD. And this gets really personal. It gets personal for you and it gets personal for me. See, many of you in here, in fact, most of you in here have kids. And of course, your kids will remember you. And some of you have grandkids and your grandkids will probably remember you because you took some time to invest in them. But your great-grandchildren, they'll have no memory of you whatsoever. Generations come and generations go and they forget. Solomon says that's just the nature of life. That's one of the main facts of reality. See, what he does is he comes to us here in this text and he says, on the surface, because of our human limitations, life under the sun is fleeting and life under the sun is frustrating. Now, it's a cul-de-sac that you drive into and then you go round and round again and nothing ever significant really happens. And then eventually, you're going to be carried out in a casket and you're not going to be remembered. You're going, boy, Scott, this is great. I was really hoping for an encouraging message today. And now I am depressed. Why should I bother to get up tomorrow morning? Why should I bother to go to work? Why should I bother to invest in anything? Why should I do that? And I would respond to you based on what Solomon says in this text, that if all life is life lived under the sun, you should be depressed. In fact, I think a lot of people, more than we care to admit, intentionally or intuitively, respond to the reality that Solomon has described here in some unhealthy ways. Some people respond to this reality by becoming cynical. They become sarcastic and sneering and negative about life in general, but particularly about other people. In their heart of hearts, they really do think that life is a closed system, just like Solomon's described in these first 11 verses. And so they use their cynicism and their snarkiness as protection against pain and the uncertainty of life. Now, they won't leverage their resources. They won't give their hearts to a cause or to other people because they just don't think, in all honesty, there's any value in that. And I know people like this. You might know people like this. I know people like this who come to church on a regular basis. And then other people respond to this by becoming controlling. Yeah, they recognize life is fleeting, life's frustrating. But they're determined to minimize those factors by controlling their circumstances and by trying to control all the people around them. And since they're pretty sure they know what's best, they become determined to impose their will on everybody around them. Some of us in here grew up in families where somebody was really controlling, where there was a battle of control for how life would go in the family, and as much as possible beyond the family. Believe me, I've seen this a lot in church world. And then there are some people, they respond to the reality that Solomon's described by just staying childish. They don't really want to grow up. They don't want to face reality. They just move from relationship to relationship to relationship. They move from job to job to job. They move from church to church to church. They're always on the hunt for the newest thing, or what they perceive to be better people or a more enjoyable experience. And see, I think Solomon would come to us and he'd say, you know what? If what I described in the first 11 verses is true, if life's just a closed system, if you have to live life under the sun and there's nothing from the outside coming in, you know what? Maybe one of these is your best strategy for doing life. But he doesn't stop there. He comes to us and says, you know what? You don't want to fall into these kinds of attitudes or behavior. You don't want to think that life under the sun is all there is because there's something above and beyond and below life under the sun. And so what he does throughout the book of Ecclesiastes is he points us to this God who is above life under the sun and with us in life under the sun and below life under the sun. Time and again throughout Ecclesiastes, Solomon mentions God and he honors God and he describes who God really is. And one of the main things he says about God that is so true is that God is sovereign. God rules and reigns over every aspect of life. Look what he says here in chapter 3, verse 11. God's made everything beautiful in its time. Chapter 7, verse 14. When times are good, be happy. When times are bad, consider that God has made the one as well as the other. 3 weeks ago when we were here, Melanie and I were sharing with some of you that 2 weeks ago we were going up to Portland for a wedding that I was going to officiate. And traveling is hard for me for a variety of reasons. I don't travel really well, and I'm always trying to negotiate and navigate things when I'm traveling, partly due to sleep issues. And this wedding, I've done a lot of weddings, but this wedding was kind of special because it was for a close friend of ours, and she and her now husband were getting married later in life, and I wanted to do a really good job for them. And we had never met the groom, and you know, it was just kind of a new environment, and I was kind of stressed out, and some of you prayed for us, and I appreciated that so much. Well, the trip went fantastic. I mean, the flight was good. I slept good. I think the wedding went well. We had a great time. The day after the wedding, it was up in Portland, and we drove across the bridge up towards Washington State, and we crossed the Columbia River, and it was a clear day, and you could see Mount Hood in the distance. And I told Melanie, this is fantastic. This is awesome. It's beautiful. And we had a great breakfast, and then we had a great flight home. And then the next day, Melanie got incredibly sick with a really bad flu bug, and she was just out of it for 3 days, really sick. And then a few days after that, her car had a major major mechanical breakdown. Friends, if life is lived under the sun and that's all there is, you're always navigating good and bad. But if God is there and he's sovereign, we need to know that he's in the good. And even more importantly, he's with us in the not so good. See, I think Solomon would agree with what the great 16th century reformer John Calvin said. Calvin wrote, God's eye is not only over history, his hand is on history. Solomon wants you and me to know that, yes, life is fleeting and life is frustrating, but God's hand is on your life if you believe in him and you trusted in Jesus. And that's not all. Solomon goes on to say that God's not only sovereign, he's also the source of everything that's good under the sun. Well, look what he says in Ecclesiastes chapter 3, verse 12. He says, I know that there's nothing better for men, and he's speaking inclusively, men and women, than to be happy and to do good while they live, that everyone may eat and drink and find satisfaction in all his toil. This is the gift of God. Chapter 5, verse 19, moreover, when God gives anyone wealth and possessions and enables him to enjoy them, to accept his lot, be happy in his work, this is a gift of God. Then he seldom reflects on the days of his life because God keeps him occupied with gladness of heart. Solomon is not denying the argument he made in chapter 1, verses 1 through 11, that life is fleeting and life is incredibly frustrating. He's made a strong case for that. But he's saying that's just life on the surface of things. That's life lived under the sun. Above and beyond and below all that, the sovereign God is graciously at work, providing good things for you and for me, like our families and our jobs and great food and all that technology, which will be obsolete next year. Friends, there are some implications to what Solomon's arguing here. One of the implications is that we want to give ourselves wholeheartedly in worship to this great and good and sovereign God. We want to bow before him every day in praise and adoration and thanksgiving for giving us life above and beyond what we experience on a daily basis. We want to worship him. It also means that we want to leverage ourselves for the work of his kingdom and the work of his church. God has ordained that his kingdom expand, and he has ordained that his church be the primary agent of that. And he wants us to leverage our time and our talent and our treasure so that we can reach people who are living lives of cynicism and controlling behavior and childlike behavior and come into a personal relationship with Jesus where they can find peace and joy. I think this also means that we want to invest ourselves in our marriages and our families and our friendships and our jobs, because those are some of the very best gifts that our gracious and good and sovereign God has provided for us. Friends, this week, I want every one of us to spend some time worshiping the Savior, leveraging something of what he's given us for his work, and investing in some way in your marriage, in your kids, in your grandkids, in your friends, investing in your job. Because those are some of the things that the gracious and sovereign God has given us that give us great joy. And I think as we do that, what we will see is that God will help us experience something of an experience of transcendence beyond just the daily grind and the trivial aspects of the life that we all live under the sun.